Listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. Brothers and sisters, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to Journeys with JP. And just for the dates, since we're here in UK, and we can only get to do this once every 7 years or so, once every 8 years, but here we go. Yes, indeed. May the 4th be with you. We are... it's the only time my Monday show falls on the May the 4th. You know, I don't know. It must happen once every 7 years. So there's a thing. So, yes, indeed, May the 4th be with you. And we are here with us in... it's actually a quite an interesting confluence of things as... the new spirituality of humanity does seem to be based on the ideas given forth in Star Wars. You know, it's a kind of new philosophy, a kind of retelling of the ancient story of Enki and Anu and everybody. Anyway, today my guest is Michael J.S. Carter. Not Michael J. Michael Carter is he's an author, and he's also been... interfaith minister. That's interfaith, not interface. Interfaith minister and here's the thing. He's been an interfaith minister, but he's also a contactee. And that must have been a little complicated at first. So let's talk about how his journey's come along. Hello, Michael. How are you today?
How are you, sir? It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. I listened to your interview. I was recommended by Mark Eddy. Hello, Mark. How are you doing? Put a shout out for you. He sent me a thing. I said, when you're free. He said, tomorrow. Okay, that'll do. I like spontaneous. That's good. So for the next 2 hours, you and I are going to explore... Contact in the Chapel, as I called the name of this show. One of the sort of terrible puns of that is that Michael will be speaking very soon at the Contact in the Desert conference, and I thought I'd just play on those words because I'm cheap. Any chance for a cheap laugh? That's me. I'll bring one in. Anyway, I have to be honest. You know, this is. Anyway, what do you get? I don't get paid. If I got paid, I wouldn't be so cheap. But you know, because I don't get paid, I'm cheap. Anyway, I produce for nothing. I bring people great knowledge and great wisdom from interesting people. So, good afternoon, Michael. How are you doing?
Okay, JP. It's good to hear from you.
So, where do you want to start? I mean, you've got a new book, but I was looking at the old book, the previous book that you've written.
Yes.
Do you want to start there? Because that probably brought your story together. That's where you kind of laid out your foundational story. So do you want to kind of give us a synopsis of this first book? Because that'll have all the stories, won't it?
Yeah, well, actually, and you know, even today, this is the book that people seem to be, I think there are more sales for that book than my new book. And the new book's been out since October of 2014. Yeah, basically, the book started out as my master's thesis in seminary. I attended Union Theological Seminary in New York City. I'm very proud of that. It's one of the top seminaries in the country. And I was very pleased that they allowed me to write on the topic. Many seminaries would not even have entertained the topic of UFOs involved in the Bible. So I stand on their shoulders. And so that's how the book came to be. I actually started adding my own experiences, but initially it was basically just my research into the Old and New Testaments and the way I see it, the possibility of extraterrestrial contact. I had a small publisher, Blue Star Productions, Barbara DeBolt, a little mom and pop publishing house out in Arizona, and she told me, she said, you've got to put your personal experiences in there. You've got to come out of the closet, as it were. And I listened. And that's how the first book came to be. And the first book is entitled Alien Scriptures, Extraterrestrials and the Holy Bible.
Okay, so you're basically, from your, I mean, would you say it was a heavily indoctrinated situation that you found yourself in?
Because
when you're talking about, you seem to be kind of on the lighter edge of the religious side and like more able to see the sides of other religions. How did that happen?
Oh, I always knew that. Instinctively, I always knew that there were other paths. I mean, I was raised in the African American Baptist tradition, pretty, you know, the party line. Jesus died for our sins. We're not worthy, but since he died, you know, we'll be okay. He rose from the dead, the whole bit. But as a youngster, I had friends of different backgrounds, and so I got to see other ways of looking at life and the world, and I just knew that, you're not going to burn in hell because you may not believe the same thing I do. Now, there was a time in my life when I thought that what I was taught was true, but I learned very quickly that that wasn't true. It just defied belief. It just defied common sense to me. And that's when I started my journey. And I have colleagues now who are more traditional Christian or more orthodox, if you will. And, you know, we just have to agree to disagree. I kind of look at it, I use this analogy, I'm sure you've heard something similar, if not the same thing. If I'm going to Scotland, I may fly, someone else may drive, someone else may swim, someone else may walk. We're all going to Scotland, we're just taking different routes. And I kind of look at religion that way, that we're trying to get to the same place. We may just be taking different routes. And so for me, that's not a problem.
Well, hang on a second, Michael. Can I just roll you back there? Because you went very quickly over the moment where you just decided this can't be enough. What was it? What was the trigger? I'm always interested in this. What's the trigger? What was the experience that happened?
The trigger for me, I don't know if it was just one eureka moment or aha moment. It just, I have met many people who are good people. And I just couldn't see how a loving God, if you want to use the word, would barbecue someone because they didn't believe. It just didn't make sense. And I think that, you know, there's one thing to have faith, but I don't think one needs to suspend common sense. And that was just my journey. It wasn't one, aha, I just get it. It was just during the course of my life. I met people from different faith backgrounds. I met people who were different cultures, and it just didn't resonate with me. It wasn't a big deal.
Who do you think was the most spiritual person that you met? The highest being, and how did you know that?
Are you mean a human being, or you mean someone I know, or?
Well, I mean, in terms of, say, you're at the seminary, and you know, there might be a couple of old weirdos professors, but there might be one who's like, who's really pristine, you know.
The most spiritual being that I had met was not a, was an agnostic. He was a good friend of mine. His name was Frank Barra. We lived in New York. He had been a monk. I don't forget what order. May have been Benedictine. I'm not sure. And he just, you know, he just said, this doesn't make sense to me. This doesn't resonate with me. And, he and I used to have very, very long talks, and I just observed the way he lived his life. He was in the moment. He enjoyed his life. He enjoyed nature. He was a gay man. He had a partner about 30 some years named Andre, and they were both artists. And I watched the way he treated people. I listened to his sense of humor. I saw that this, he was at peace with himself. And in that way, he was at peace with the world. And he had come to the point that he said, I don't care whether there's a God or not. I don't even know if there's a God or not. He said, but I know I have this life, and I have people who love me and people that I love. And, you know, he just looked at life from that point of view. And it was just beautiful. I don't even know if Frank's still alive. But to me, he was one of the most genuine people I had ever met. And he was not a religious person at all. He was, you know, going into the Benedictine order, but he left that order.
Yeah, they probably weren't spiritual enough for him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's you know, I guess part of evolving is unlearning as much as it is learning.
So that was your, what, I mean, it's not exactly being mainstream, being in the priesthood and all that stuff. It's a complete demi-monde. It's another sphere, another realm from the everyday world that most people exist in. But then you get involved in another bubble, another reality, another realm of consciousness. And that's the extraterrestrial one. So, these things happen generationally. So is there and also from what I understand, people who are, who make contact are contacting their own people. Like, you have a DNA. If you're in contact with someone, anybody, your DNA has a match with their, frequency band. Otherwise they couldn't find you anyway. So what? How did?
I don't know if that's.
Do you know
true.
Anything about that?
No, I mean, I don't know if that's true. I don't know how they find me. I mean, I know that they said they've known me for lifetimes, but I don't know about how they find people. Maybe they go on your vibration. Maybe they're microchips. I wouldn't say that they couldn't find you. I haven't seen too many things that they really could not do. I came from the tradition, the Baptist tradition, and there was a time in my life when I was very young where I did not believe in life on other planets. I remember talking to someone, and they were astonished, and they said, well, how come you don't believe in life on other planets, not even the possibility? And I said, because it's not in the Bible. Now, you know, 30 years later, 35 years later, that's precisely what I'm saying. But my first contact as an adult happened on December 28, 1989, coming back from a trip to the pyramids on the Yucatan in Chichen Itza and Tulum. And after that contact, well, they continue, but after that initial one, I was not so much, and after I went to a therapist, a psychiatrist, to make sure I wasn't crazy, because I was fearing for my sanity. But after that, I'm more into the spiritual. I'm more into the transformation that can happen once you look one of these beings in the eyes. So I'm not so much into nuts and bolts and propulsion systems. And I mean, I'm sure that's very interesting. But that's what got me going. And so I just started reading and studying and other traditions and seeing where the possibility that these beings, if they came to me in 1989 CE, then they probably have been around from 1989 BCE and beyond. And that started me on my journey.
That's the moment.
That's the one.
That's the one I was on.
That's the game changer. Yes, that's the game changer, JP. And I was obsessed. But you know, I went to a support group, as I talk about in the book, which helped ground me. But I was obsessed on reading and studying, and you know what's going on. But I noticed that I live my life a little less fearfully. I stopped buying into this separation of us and them. You made a comment about you love that I call them brothers. Well, they are brothers and sisters, just like you're my brother. I stopped believing in all the noise about separateness, and I started evolving. It accelerated my spiritual growth. And so for me, it's not so much that, I mean, I'm one of millions of people who've had contacts with off-world intelligences. But for me, that's not the issue. The issue is the message. And the message is, it's not a sexy message. We've heard it from other saints and avatars, male and female, is that we fight too much. We are destroying ourselves, our ecosystem, the planet. And if we keep going down this path, it's going to be catastrophic. And so the message has been, no, we're not here to take you over or your planet. I mean, let's face it, with the technology, they could have done that a long time ago. They're trying to help human beings go to the next phase of evolution, which is a change in consciousness. I love that word. That's the word you use. It's a change in our paradigm. And that takes time. But we don't have as much time as we think.
There's plenty of time, but there's no time to waste.
Yes.
And well said. except the guy said, that's me, in 1987. Anyway, there's less time now. And so here's the thing. I mean, my cosmology goes, and you know, therefore, the people who endure my programs, their cosmology is stretched. It's much expanded than the regular. So we include Lemuria, Atlantis, Egypt, Babylonia, yeah. Sumeria, yeah. in the kind of whole timeline of how we got here, you know. And we're aware of the Nazi influence and the time travel influence and the genetic influence and all these other things. You know, we're building, I and my audience are building the puzzle, seeing what the big picture is how we've only been lied to in a very short recent period of time. You know, we've enjoyed an awful lot of time that we haven't been amnesiac'd. It's only recently. Well, what do your, you know, I'm going to call them your people, right? Because yes. Those are the people who you've spoken to, right?
Yes.
Number one, do they situate themselves? Do they say we come from Sirius, Aldebaran, you know, anything like that?
No, and I've never even had the presence of mind to ask them that. I've seen so far three different races. They've told me that they have known me in Atlantis and in Egypt. They said you seem to have forgotten because of the fear we see you going through. But there have been three different races. There have been, well, I guess we would call them grays, but these people were chalk white. I've seen reptilians, and I've seen what we commonly refer to as Nordics.
Okay, and which one of them said they that you were their people of? Did that make sense?
when I first saw the little chalk-colored people, they said that they had been in contact with me since the times of Atlantis and Egypt.
Right.
I'm sure I probably have been, in some way, met all of them, all of the above, mm-hmm. at some time or another. They have encouraged me to do what I'm doing now. As a matter of fact, I was told that this is what I said I would, it's a contract. Now, you have free will, but this is what I said I would do. That I would, one of the things I said I would do is to obviously bring more love to the planet and try to get people to not be afraid of difference, but that I would let them know, people know that these brothers and sisters are for real, and that at least the ones that I have been in contact with, and I can't speak for anybody else, do not mean us any harm at all.
And so one of the messages that is coming through at the moment is that certain different races want to kind of make peace because they realize that time has kind of run out for them in terms of trying to push the timeline onto something that is more conducive to their way of thinking, you know, i.e. domination, and has moved it into a place where, you know, where we need it to be, where it needs to be, which is that we are moving towards dominion. These negative influences are falling away. Is this the kind of message that you're getting? And what do the reptilians want? What do the reptilians say about this? Because they seem to be the ones that are, like, you could say they may be difficult in negotiation.
Yeah. I don't know. The reptilian being, two of them came at two different times, and they just came in my room and looked at me and told me not to be afraid. One of them even touched me. Now, I don't know about the being. I've read about those. I don't particularly think that the reptilians are negative. I think because it's interesting. The more bizarre they look to us, the more evil they become. I think that's a projection of human beings. The Nordics are beautiful and blonde, and so they mean us well, and the other races don't. I think that's a stereotype.
Yeah, and not necessarily true.
What I've gotten, and this is pretty much common knowledge, is that when we split the atom, especially over Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we got their attention. Because not only are we a danger to ourselves, but we're a danger to other worlds because of our misuse of the of nuclear energy. And so they come to monitor. They do not interfere so much as you know, of course, there are books out now, especially by Robert Hastings, UFOs and Nukes. We have a lot of military people talking about seeing these ships over nuclear installations, shutting down. I mean, the message is clear. You're like a child with a gun in your hand. Someone's going to get hurt. Again, I go back to the message that I was told, is that you must evolve if you're going to survive. I don't know anything about any difficult ones or ones that are evil. I don't know anything about that. I know people who said they've contacted those or been contacted, but I just like to try to keep it to my experience. I think there's enough fear out there that I really don't want to add any more if I can help it.
Yeah, and I think this is part of the human condition in an exopolitical way, because humans are not aware of their telepathic abilities, their telepathic transmission, if you like, that, you know, to them, that, like, we're like screaming out, shouting out random stuff because we're not aware that we're actually, you know, transmitting thoughts.
No, you're right, and this is where the evolution has to come in, because, you know, thoughts are things, but it also goes to show how powerful we can be, because we create our own realities by our thoughts.
Indeed. I've always had a thing, thoughts are things that have people. So that,
yeah. I mean, Gandhi says it, be the change you want to see in the world. If you want more love, then be more loving. if you want more forgiveness, then be more forgiven. Because the only people that we have to be concerned with, we have to do our own evolution. A lot of people, I find, they're so concerned about what the other 8 billion people are doing. And to a degree, yes, because we're all interconnected. But the point is that Rumi says it wonderfully, I'm paraphrasing, when I was younger, I thought I was clever, and so I wanted to change the world. Now that I'm older, I realize I just need to change myself.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what it's about. It's about human evolution. And it can be glacial. Yes, we know. But, you know, I have the audacity to hope. I enjoy my life. Where I can reach out and help a brother or sister, I do that. I try not to stress over things I can't control. And that's a challenge sometimes, but I find a greater sense of inner peace. And, that's kind of where I'm at 58 years on the planet. This is what's working for me. I'm always clear to say that it doesn't work, doesn't mean it has to work for everybody. You know, some people say, well, when they hear, you know, I'm a minister, you know, I'm ordained, I have my degrees in ministry, and they have this kind of stereotype of what I'm supposed to be like until I open my mouth. And so I kind of enjoy that, because you can't judge, and I really know how to do that, like most people. And so I hopefully I have a different message, a more practical message, but you don't, with the message I'm talking about, you don't have to have contact from an off-world intelligence to have it. I mean, this is about love. This is about not believing the hype. This is about the interconnectedness of the whole universe. So, and people were talking about that who don't even believe maybe in off-world intelligences.
Well, and here's the thing, you know, very recently, well, not that recently, in the last few years, and it's been gearing up to this. We've had more and more the feeding of it's okay to talk about aliens now, kind of thing. And then the Pope comes out and he says, oh yeah, fine, yeah, we'll baptize an alien. Wouldn't baptize me, but baptize an alien. You know, it's got to the point where it's almost come to the point of being accepted by, and the only people who aren't accepting it are the official mainstream media. Everybody else seems to be like, oh, yeah, sure, aliens, no problem.
Well, you're right, and I believe it's by design. You know, people talk about disclosure, and for many people, and I love the work that Brother Bassett is doing and Dr. Greer and the exopoliticians, is fascinating. I think that, and I support it, but I feel and think that disclosure's happening already. No, Obama or Clinton or Jeb Bush or whoever's going to be the next Caesar of our empire, people are waiting for them to come out on the White House lawn and say, guess what? That may or may happen. I don't know. But when you have the Vatican talking openly about it, it has become more mainstream. You have the UK, you have, Mexico, you have France, you have countries in South America, you have them all releasing their information about what they know. That's disclosure. The United States is, we're going to be the taillight instead of the headlight on this thing.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think of that thing about Putin saying, you know, okay, if you don't want to if you don't want to disclose, we will disclose for you.
Well, I don't know if that's true. I mean, I saw it on social media. I can't believe everything I read on social media. I mean, everybody else has disclosed it. And I don't want to wait for my government to come out and say, I mean, there's a lot of issues at stake, but we know it's real. If you read the polls, at least in the United States, 48 to 50% of the people think that there's life on other planets. 48% believe that the government is lying. I think that's disclosure.
When people start seeing through the through the hype and start, but in a way, in some ways, you know, from my perspective, you know, and of course, I wasn't in America and I didn't live through the TV barrage that was the mind control that was 9/11. That it was to me very obvious that that was a demolition. Yet in your ears you get, it's a terrorist, it's Osama bin Laden, and you know, now we realize that this is all part of a very prescribed kind of method. If you want to get something done in the way, you know, you do these things, you shock people, you awe them, and then they'll do anything you tell them because it's like traumatizing. But
yes.
I think a lot of people who actually had eyes to see in the same way that I was seeing, I saw that was a demolition. I've seen buildings demolished, and I saw that's a demolition. There's nothing that isn't a demolition in that. And boom, 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 and Building 7, right? And then the whole stuff about Building 7. So what I, in a way, it's been a gift, because the gift is that people have, some people, at least more than five other people, got cognitive dissonance and said, that's not a terrorist attack, that's a building demolition.
Yeah.
And thus woken them up. And that's what the gift, to me, the gift of 9/11 was, is that they're now bringing out their toys. They're now showing that they've got these big weapons and these clever things and these bombs and little bombs and big bombs and beams and all these little things that can affect somehow almost seemingly magic because of the level of technology that they have hidden over the years. How do you feel being able to bring people through an exposure of that, through your own recognition in yourself?
It's a great question. They're all great questions, JP. Okay, when I first, you know, I don't trust my government, okay? There, I've said it. And I was reading all the David Icke I could get my hands on, and I was reading, you know, history, you know, alternative history, if you will. And I found it very fascinating. And then as I've gotten older, I'm like, okay, let's say it was a demolition. What am I supposed to do about it? What can I do about that? I can spin my wheels and go around and saying, look what they've done. And I want to be clear. I'm not saying that there aren't people who do that, and everybody has their role. I just don't know what to do with it. It's so much information, not just with that. And at this point in my life, I'm looking for a little wisdom. So, as I alluded to before, I can't change that. But what I can do is go out here tomorrow and try to love somebody. What I can do is go out here tomorrow and try to be a more authentic individual. That's what I can do. But I can't do anything about that was wrong. Look what we did in Iraq. There was no weapons there. There's nothing. I can't do anything about that. I can be aware of it. But I'm looking for, that's information. And some of it is true and some of it isn't. Like I said, I'm looking for a little wisdom now. Because there's a lot of apathy, and a lot of people feel that way because they're overwhelmed. My government's lying about this. We still have troops in Afghanistan. What happened over here in France? What's going on? I mean, you're bombarded. And so I try to reduce it to, what can I do something about? What can I do something about? So I'm informed, and I find these things fascinating, but some of them are above my pay grade. So what can I do in my community? What can I do in my relationships with others and myself to help make the world add a little more healing? That's where I'm at right now.
So, by changing it, the parts of ourselves that we see outside and we think, oh, that's terrible, we've got to stop that, it has the effect of finding us looking at our own history, our own personal history, like when we were kids and what happened when we were a baby before we were thinking, you know, healing in the inner child, and all that. And then it takes us back to past lives. And now, here's the thing. You know, you're a minister. What's your stance on reincarnation? You were saying, you know, it's a bit like the joke I used to tell my Christian ex-wife, because she decided suddenly that she didn't believe in reincarnation anymore. And I said, in a past life, you believed in reincarnation. So I used to say that to her. But, and it didn't get a laugh either.
I believe in it, Jay. I do. And you know, and I just want to clear something up. You know, yeah, and then we'll go into reincarnation. Yeah, listen, I know that my government is peeing on my head and telling me it's raining about so many things. And the things, I don't mean I just sit back and go, I saw the pictures of the Pentagon. Man, there was no plane that hit that. There was no fuselage. There was no wing. I mean, come on. I mean, Ray Charles could see that. But when it's all said and done, I can spin my wheels about it, but I can't affect it. But there are other things I can turn to that I can affect. Now, my space friends have mentioned reincarnation. There's still pieces of it in the Bible. The early Jews believed in reincarnation. We could argue that Jesus was probably teaching reincarnation rather than resurrection. But Kenneth Ring, who wrote the book Dancing Toward Omega, has done all this work with NDEs and people who've had them. You know, there is life after life. You know, and look, Einstein says, you know, we're energy, right? And so energy, you can't destroy it. We just change form. So I think it's pretty, there's a pretty strong case for it. And plus there are biblical verses that lend themselves to it as well. There's the story of, I think it's in Matthew, it's either Matthew or John, and actually it's in all the Gospels, but there are two of them. The first one is Jesus is on the way to Jerusalem, and he asked his disciples, who do you say that I am? And one of them says, well, you're Elijah, and one says, well, you're John the Baptist. And remember, John the Baptist was beheaded probably about 8 months before, and Elijah, of course, went up in the ship. But basically, they were saying, you're these people reincarnate. And Jesus didn't say, what are you, crazy? That's the sickest thing I ever heard. And of course, Peter is supposed to have said, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God, and da-da-da-da-da. Jesus says, well, I'm going to build my church on you, blah, blah, blah. But they were talking about, when he said, who do you think I am? They were saying, you're reincarnated. You're Elijah, come back. You're John the Baptist, come back. That's reincarnation. There's another story in John where the disciples are trying to heal. There's a blind man. And they go up to Jesus and they say, Master, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Well, what they're saying is, did he sin in another life in order to be blind in this one? That's reincarnation.
Exactly.
So there's some of the traces that, you know, that are still in the Bible. They didn't take all of them out. Those two are still there.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I came to the idea of reincarnation kind of almost like a kind of mathematical empiricism. Is that, well, I saw karma operating in my life. I noticed, I think, hey, that's weird. There's a sort of symmetry to life. I wonder what that is. You know, it took me years to like see these cycles, and there was a thing that went in and a thing that went out, you know, like a tide coming in and going out. Aha, there's a thing here. And I used to call it symmetry. And then I learned this word, karma. Oh, hang on, they got a word for it. That's good. And then I thought, hang on a second, for karma to really work, you can't just do it in one lifetime because there are cycles that are bigger. So you've got to do, you know, it's all about these, you know, I started seeing the cycles.
Yes.
And once you start seeing the cycles, you realize that everything is cycles. Everything in, you know, absolutely everything is cycles. Tiny little ones that we can't see so much that we believe that they're solid objects, you know, and,
yes.
You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating, and to me, again, it makes sense. And I'm not saying that everything has to make sense, but it makes sense because all debts still get paid. I mean, they may not happen as quickly as you want, but that means that there is an intelligence and a balance in the universe, as far as I'm concerned. And so, all debts do get paid. Everything does get evened out, if you will. And that's what makes sense to me. I also see why the early church and the church now is suspicious of it, because it takes away power and glory from the church and the clergy. I mean, I don't mind. I'd love to live in a world where you didn't need ministers. That's okay. I could find another job. I could find another job. But what's so empowering to me, and you do this on your show, and I can tell this by just us, you know, talking as brothers, you empower others. The spirituality that a lot of the space brothers and sisters are talking about, and remember, even they will acknowledge a higher intelligence. They don't think of it as Santa Claus. If I'm naughty, I go to hell, and if I'm nice, I go to heaven. But they acknowledge that they're universal laws. And so once you're in touch with those laws, it doesn't make your life always easier. There's still life lessons, but you're more in the flow of things. And so when you tell people not to look at some God outside up there, but to look at what's in you as well, you're empowering people. And that's a message the church doesn't want, because the church, the Orthodox Church, wants you to look to them as opposed to looking within yourself. You very rarely do you hear people preach about Jesus saying the kingdom of heaven is within you, or that greater works than I do, you shall do. So we've made a rock star of Jesus and Buddha and Muhammad, but let's keep it in Christianity. And that's not what he wanted at all. And I also see it coming when I go to contact in the desert. I will tell them, probably ad nauseam, I'm glad to be here. But I'm not here because I'm a contactee. Some of you are contactees. I'm here to deliver a message. And it's not a new message. It's not a sexy message. But the message is we're killing each other. And we've got to grow up, and we've got to do it quickly. That's the message. So don't make a rock star out of me. Buy my books. That's great. But it's the message that's most important.
Okay.
You've got to listen to this.
All right. Here's a curveball. All right. Get ready.
Yeah.
What'd you do about Dick Cheney then? I mean,
I don't do anything about Dick Cheney, brother. I let Dick Cheney do what Dick Cheney has to do. I mean, I'm not trying to be difficult. I mean, that to me, what are you supposed, while you pointing fingers at Dick Cheney, what about the fingers pointing back at you? You cannot change Dick Cheney. JP is not, Michael Carter, we're not going to change, we're not even going to get close to Dick Cheney. But what we can do is look at ourselves.
So we look at our inner Cheney. I'm not going to use the other word.
Call it what you will. That's a great way to put it. But now, if there's a situation where you can make a difference, that's how you change. But you people are worrying about Dick Cheney, and they got more neuroses and codependency than they know what to do with. And so it's easy to look at other people, so we don't have to look at ourselves. If I'm worried about Dick Cheney and what Bush did and who did this and Wolfowitz and what they're doing, then I don't have to look at me. Because that's not going to change. Not unless you happen to be an ambassador or that's your calling. My calling is not to change Cheney or Putin or Bush or whatever. My mission is to change me. But by changing me, I change my world. But I've been there where I'm so busy focused on, you know, other things because I just didn't want to look at my shadow. I didn't want to look at that. I didn't want to look at that, so I'm looking at everybody else.
That's right. It's easy to get lost in the minutiae of the conflicts that are going on all over the world. It's so easy to be completely lost and lose sight of the conflicts that are going on inside one.
Yeah, that's why the 12 steps are such a powerful spiritual tool. That's why the Serenity Prayer is beautiful. Let me accept the things I can change and have the courage to change them. And let me have the wisdom to know what I can't. I saw something on Facebook the other day. It was trite almost, but it was to the point. The greatest way to have inner peace is to mind your own business. Not in a narcissistic, navel-gazing way, but while I'm busy looking at your stuff and taking your inventory, I don't have to look at mine.
So then we take a moment. Many people have a crash, an accident, an illness. They might break their leg or be immobilized in some way that forces them to face being alone in their own body.
Yes. Yes.
And that's usually the turning point for people, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, let me tell you, I was an actor in New York, and I was drugging and sexing and having a good time, you know, it was a fast life, and I got sick and almost killed myself from doing too many drugs, and I had to go to a hospital for 3 days, there you have the biblical 3 days, and they told my girlfriend at the time, who became my first wife, they said, your boyfriend may not make it. Just want you to know that. And, I did make it. But I tell you, that was the wake-up call. But the other thing that sealed the deal, because a year later, I had my first ET experience as an adult, and that was the other thing. That, Michael, this is not what you signed up for. You can do this. You can chase every woman in town. You can chase your ego and whatever. That's fine. But that's not what you signed up for. So, you know, you have one has the eureka moment.
The aha.
Yeah.
I remember mine, which is, and here's the thing. You were saying before, you know, again, one of these little moments that you really went glossed over, I'm going to drag you back there, all right, with a scruff of your neck. You went to the pyramids, and then you saw ETs, right? So,
yeah.
You had this big, physical trauma. You, went to the pyramids, and then you started meeting other people, let's say, other brothers, right? Now, in that first instance, or in the second, at the pyramids, did you receive any kind of inkling that things were about to change?
No. I mean, I knew, you know, I wasn't wasting my, I knew that, you know, listen, I thought I was going to be Denzel Washington and what have you. And I knew, I was trying to walk both paths. I was trying to be party boy and still pursue my spiritual stuff, and I had to make a choice. So I knew something was going to change, but it may not have been the change I wanted. And so that's the best way I can put it intuitively. I just knew that I'm going to tell you like this, JP. I always wanted to serve. I knew that from a child. I knew that I would be doing something, whether, you know, I knew I would be standing before people giving a message, some type of priest. And I could have been a religious priest or a secular priest. I could have been a therapist or what have you. That I knew. But I needed to get off, either do it or get off the pot. And those two events, kind of, when I came to the fork in the road, I had a choice. And I just said, this is what I want to do. I want to serve. I want to be of service. It was hard to be of service being an actor, especially a struggling actor, because let's face it, there's a certain amount of narcissism involved. Everything is about you. I got to take my acting classes. I got to do this. Me, me, me. I got to take this. I got to audition. And that's not what was happy about with. I hope that answers your question.
And it made you look at everything in a different light.
I had to. Because, you know what? Let me just pull out the stops. I almost OD'd from doing too much cocaine. I went in the hospital for 3 days. I almost gave myself a heart attack. So then I come out. The doctor tells my girlfriend at the time he could die. Okay, so guess what? I stopped. It took me twice to stop. And then, several months later, I have the ET experience. But I had to make a choice. But once I made the choice, you know, it's like, God, it's like, you know, when you want to make a move, whether it's a new job or a new relationship, and you're not sure about it. So you got, you know, you're hesitant. Well, that's what the universe sends you. Maybe you get a job offer, maybe not, because you haven't committed to it. But once you said, you know what, I'm going to leave this job, well, I'm going to look for another job, then all of a sudden, the right person comes your way. The right opportunity. We're talking about thoughts, right? We're talking about vibrations. Once I told the universe, I'm serious about this, then the opportunities came. But when I was trying to do both, they didn't come because I wasn't committed. That's not the vibration I was sending out. I'm going through it now. My wife and I just split up, and I love her to death. You hear me? And I don't want to, but we just weren't making it together. This is after 15 years. So I'm saying, you know, yeah, I want to date and all that. I'm 58 years old. I'm single again. But I don't really want to date again. So as a result of that, I'm not meeting anyone. But it took me a while to get it. Not only am I not ready emotionally, because I'm not looking for another relationship, but I really want to be with her. And so when I get over that, or when I decide, well, we can work it out, then that's what the universe is going to mirror to me. But in the meantime, I haven't made any decisions, not really, on a soul level. And so the universe is sending me either people who are not available or no one at all. But now I'm getting it. I'm not really set. I'm emotionally gone yet. I mean, those are the best illustrations I can give you.
I can certainly relate to a lot of that. You know, that it's a... The universe responds to our feelings, not our thoughts. And if you think something, it took me years to get this, years and years and years, and mainly because I was a very intellectual. I spent a lot of time in my brain, thinking about things, making, you know, I was a computer programmer. I used to do it all day. You know, computational brain. But when you get to feeling things, it's much easier, actually, because you get to, certainly if you're troubleshooting, as I used to do, it must be very, very quick. If you're troubleshooting intuitively, it really reduces the amount of time you find things.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, because it's the feeling is your intentionality.
That's right.
It's like a prayer. It's a prayer. When you pray, it's not the eloquent words. It's your intention.
Yeah.
And you can be illiterate. And but it's the intention.
That's right.
It.
Everybody can feel.
Yes.
That's sometimes why stupid people are lucky. Because they can feel. Anyway, look, we're coming up into a break in a few seconds' time. Here we go. There we go. Perfectly timed. And we'll be back in about 5-10 minutes. Michael J.S. Carter. Not J.C. J.S. Carter. We'll be back.
All right, man.
Okay, could you just mute for a few minutes? Well, I'm just typing that. Well, new world.
If you can take it.
Right. Okay. So I've thrown through things, and people can. People can. Type that into Google and find it.
Okay?
Yeah, I'm hearing you perfectly. Yeah. Oh, hang on. Okay. All right, hang on. There we go. On Wall Spirit Radio, you were offline. There we go. Excuse me about that. It was coming through, but probably through my speakers. There we go. Yes.
Okay.
So, thank you, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Where were we?
Well, we were talking. You very eloquently stated about what you do, how you serve, about. You know, you're getting this information out, you know, being a computer, a programmer and then how you got into doing the radio show. You didn't go too much into that, but this is your way of changing and making the world a better place.
Yeah, we've all got our little, particle in this, In this big mass of stuff, you know, we're all one tiny particle in it. But in your case, yours stretched off world, yours involved interaction with other beings. Now, this has to be, you know, it start. You started in your first book. How did the second book develop out of that? Was the second book more of a kind of exploration into that world, or was it more of a grounding of that world into yours?
Oh, great questions. No, this is what happened, JP. You know, I sometimes appear on the TV show Ancient Aliens, and the show talks about the possibilities, hypotheses about extraterrestrial contact with our ancestors. And where we were going, I wanted people, okay, let's say you buy into the Bible, the Quran, that we're being visited by off-world intelligences, and there are several races, and they all have different agendas. Okay, that'll be our point of departure. But I think the average person is also saying, then what are you saying? Are you saying God is an ET? Or are you saying there is no God? And I wanted people to know that, and because I am a clergy person, that that's not necessarily where ancient alien hypothesis or ufologists are going. And so I wrote a book talking about going within, to not looking outside of ourselves for salvation, for a connection, that being part of the universe, that we, and if you want to use the word God, primal force, universal mind, call it what you will, that That's something you can tap into. And you don't need to have a priest or clergy person to assist you in doing that. And that's part of the message of the ETs. If you look at the Billy Meyer case, yes, there's a lot of, well, maybe, maybe not. But basically, the messages are the same. And any true spiritual path, I don't care whether it's A Course in Miracles or it's any of the monotheistic religions or so-called New Age, which I hate that term, but they all talk about this, that to a greater or lesser degree, that what you're seeking is inside of you. You don't have to find God because God was never lost. It's inside of you, this force, this let the force be with you. I mean, and ETs will talk about this, that there is a universal consciousness. And it's not anthropomorphic. But you are part of it. But you forget that you're part of it because you're so busy fighting over, he has kinky hair, you're gay. He's black, you're white. He's straight, he's Tea Party, you're not. And we get so caught up into the outer that we forget about the inner. And I'm saying that human evolution, and there's a history of it, the Gnostic texts, the teachings of Jesus, the teachings of the Buddha, they can point us. You don't have to throw religion out. There are parts of it we don't need anymore, but you don't have to throw the whole thing out because it's trying to teach us how to be connected. And that's where that second book came from. I wanted people to know that I'm not saying there is no God. I'm just saying that maybe we need to change our concept of what God is.
Well, certainly that he's not a Santa kind of figure.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's you. When I get up in the morning, if I have 5 minutes of meditation, I try to have about 20. But if I have 5 minutes of meditation, it makes my day better. Because during the day, when I get into that ego state, if I've meditated in the morning, I catch myself. And I can say, you need to go in the bathroom and take a couple of deep breaths or go in your office. I do that. I can navigate it. Because I have that center. And it doesn't have to be to God or whatever, just the time to be quiet, the time to be still. And all religious and spiritual traditions talk about the stillness and the sounds of silence.
That's
what we're talking about.
I totally agree. One thing I try to do is like a minimal meditation in the morning. And at least to say, thank you for this day. Thank you for the roof over my head and the electricity in my wires, you know.
Yes. And even Meister Eckhart says, if the only prayer you ever utter is thank you, that would be enough.
Exactly.
See, we get up in the morning and we turn on the news, so we're filled with fear. And then we have our caffeine. So now we've poured caffeine on top of the fear. And then we go out and wonder why our day winds up the way it's been.
This is another thing, you know. Start, because really it's like, you know, you start with a trajectory. Every morning you have a different trajectory. It's like the angle you're holding your bow at as you release the arrow, you know.
Yes.
And sometimes you just aim it really, really high and it just comes straight back down on your head. Or sometimes you aim too low and it just goes on and falls on the floor.
It's not the cure-all, but when you're not so easily knocked off your center. And the funny thing about meditation is the more you do it, the more your body and your mind crave it. And so you start to feel, it's like when you exercise and then when you don't for a while, you start to feel, your body says, hey man, we need to go for a swim, or, you know, we need to go for a jog, we need to do something. And because we work our physical muscles, but we need to exercise those spiritual muscles as well. Because every day we're told that we're not good enough as we are. I mean, you know, you turn on the TV and, you know, if you're not using this toothpaste or you don't have this car, or if you want to get laid, you need to drink this beer. You know, you're constantly being assaulted that you're not good enough as you are. You need to have this. You need to have this deodorant. You need to have this car. You need, and so subtly and not so subtly, our very beingness is being chipped away at. You're not good enough until you have. And a lot of people believe that. And so, if you don't have a strong spiritual wherewithal, you're lost. You're lost.
And so we go within. Now, some people don't have, it's not as easy because you might have seen more than one religion in your life, and there's not, you know, which one is which? Which one is true? They both say they're true. And you go, I'm going to have to find them all. You know, you go and you look at the Eastern and you look at the Western. I mean, for instance, on my path, I picked up a book that is 6,000 years old called the Tao Te Ching.
Yes.
And I saw this and I read this and I thought, wow, that's really simple and I really get that. Wow, this man thinks like me. I'm happy with that. And I thought, but that's not, it's not really a religion. It's just, it takes the kind of authority stuff out of it. And indeed, in the text itself, you know, if it says, if you're really a hard tyrant, then your people grow cunning. You know, so don't make your people cunning by being, don't be so tyrannical and your people will be happy and they won't be cunning and they won't overthrow you. It's kind of obvious stuff like that. And it works the same inside your own body.
But that's what spirituality is. And so, at least in my mind, and so it doesn't have to be a religion per se. But, you know, for me, it's all about what resonates with you. I don't care whether you're an atheist. There's something in your philosophy that says, I need to treat my neighbor at least somehow the way I want to be treated, or at least ask them how they want to be treated. The golden rule is treat others as you'd have them do unto you. The platinum rule is to ask them how they want to be treated. But, you know, it's that, and that we can all agree on. We don't have to think alike to love alike. And so, there's a kernel of truth in all the philosophies of the world. There's also a universal law that says, you treat me the way I want to be treated, but also there's a universal law that says you reap what you sow. We call it karma, or we call it cause and effect. Our intelligence agencies call it blowback. So even they acknowledge that blowback is when I've done something in another country and it comes back to haunt me here. That's karma. So that's a natural law. That's a natural law on any planet. What I put out comes back to me. Once we're in tune with those laws, natural laws, they're not special. When Hitler walked out on a sunny day, the universe didn't go, uh-oh, watch out, there's Hitler. No, the sun shone on him too. When it rained, if Hitler went out, it didn't stop. It didn't just rain on Hitler and nobody else. It rained on him too. It's not personal. This is just the way the universe works. And so once we can grow up and acknowledge that and let those things in, we grow up as a species. It's not personal. It's not personal. And also, as we grow, I don't know about you, I'll be 60 in 2 years, but it's taken me almost 60 years to find out that I want to be right. I mean, I want to, well, they're almost up with Freudian. I want to be at peace. I don't want to be right. Took me almost 60 years to get that. Michael, do you want to be right or do you want to be at peace? Did you come into the world to be right? Is that why you came here? Now, there's some people who do. I came into, I just got to be right. Well, I tried that. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Okay, you're right. Now what? I'm right.
Okay. I'm you right. Get to say, I told you so. It's nice.
I'm right.
But anyway.
I'm right. I'm right that that was demolition on 9/11. I'm right that Colin Powell and Wolfowitz and all those, they lie. I'm right. I'm right, man. Okay, now what? You're right. Now what? You're right. We'll give you a little donkey. You're right. Now what? It's more to life than being right. At least it's more to my life.
I always say I'd rather be good than clever.
Because then you put aside the ego. See, the ego wants us to be right. Ego wants us to be right. And we can take this from the macro to the micro in your relationship, in your marriage, in your relationship with friends, in your relationship with yourself. Because we're always in relationship, whether we're with somebody or not. Sometimes it's just the most important relationship is the relationship with us, with ourselves. And see, the other point, again, I want to go back. You don't have to have an ET visit you to do this. This is just part of the maturation process of the human being. I believe this before I met a space brother or sister, but what they did was they helped the word become flesh. They helped me go, Michael, it's a lovely idea. What does it look like in your life? Because you can go to Bible study every Wednesday night. You can be at the temple and the shul on Friday. You can be at church on Sunday. But I know what you believe by how you treat me. You can say, oh, I'm a Christian, man. I'm in church every Sunday. And da, da, da. And that's wonderful. Well, I'm a Muslim. That's wonderful. I'll take that into consideration. But I know what you believe by the way you live. I know what you believe by how you treat me, how you treat the planet. That's what I was telling you an hour and a half ago about my friend Frank. Frank didn't believe in a God. But I knew what he believed by the way he treated me, the gentleness, the appreciation of nature, walking in Central Park, how he loved his partner, how he was creative, how he appreciated the arts. His life was the most important sermon he would ever preach. That's what I'm talking about.
And we're put on this planet. Oh, we volunteer to come to this planet.
Yes!
Yeah. You know, because
it's a schoolhouse. It's the best school going.
The best university in the galaxy, yes.
Yeah, it's the best school going. Mm. You come here and you go, oh my Lord. They kill each other, they bomb each other, they get mad over different colors. What are they, crazy? But where else are you going to learn to love? Where else are you going to learn to forgive? Where else are you going to learn who you really are? And most of that is unlearning. It's harder for me to unlearn the brainwashing I got than it is to learn something new.
Do you know what I've always found?
It just took me 58 years to learn that I didn't want to be right.
Yeah, you know, I found that it's the when you when it's the complex things that we're told. When we figure them out for ourselves, they tend to be really simple. And like, oh, I should have seen that. You know, but we've been, our minds have been scrambled against that perception.
Yes. And that's where you have to unlearn. You know, that's the thing. When you come to this planet, you're already told this is what it's like to be, this is how a man acts. This is how a woman acts. This is how, so you're already told. So you get the answers before you get to ask the questions. And as you see it in religion, that was where a lot of my anger was with religion, because you gave me answers before I could ask the questions. And then when I asked the questions, you told me, we don't ask that. When I say we're at war with another country and they're praying to God to help them win, and we're praying to God to help us win, what is God doing? Well, we don't ask that. You're a troublemaker. We don't ask that. It's crazy making. So you, as you go along, like I told you about my journey, I had to say, wait a minute, I was told that if you didn't believe what I believe, you were going to burn in hell. But then I was also told that God is love. So does love barbecue people? No. So then I had to say, well, okay, now, okay, I got through that. Are all white people angry at black people? I meet white people? No. Okay, so then I had to go through that. And my parents never taught me that. I'm being hypothetical. Are all gay people A, B, C? Are all? And then when I started, I had to say, well, I got a new paradigm. This other one doesn't work anymore. And I didn't learn anything new. I had to unlearn what I was told. Had to unlearn what I was told. America's the greatest country in the world. Really? That was another one I had to get over. Not that, I mean, you know, yeah. America's the greatest country in the world. Really? I look at other countries, I look how civilized they are, healthcare. We don't have our troops, taking people's oil and money. We're not using our veterans. Other countries don't do that. Norway, Sweden. I mean, I was crazy. Our police force. But I had to unlearn. You know, that's not new. I had to unlearn that. That's hard. Because you have to have a whole new paradigm now. And that's why a lot of people won't look. Because if I look, that means I have to be responsible. I have to be responsible now. I don't have that innocence. And that's what we're called to do. At least that's what I'm called to do.
There is, maybe, you know, this is an interesting philosophical point, because what I've been talking about, how to survive the coming moments, is by remaining in peace, by being at peace inside.
You sound like a Buddhist.
I'm more like a Buddha, which is the Eastern word for angel. You know, it's the same, all the same thing. It's getting to that level of consciousness, which is, if you can hang from that point of peace, then you can change the world, because then the world rotates around your fulcrum.
It's all about energy. When I was training as a chaplain, there's a book by a guy named Friedman. It's called Generation to Generation. Anybody who's trained as a chaplain, at least in this country, has to read that book. And the way he puts it, as whether you're walking into a hospital room, a prison cell, if you're a prison chaplain, hospital chaplain, a college chaplain, you have to be a non-anxious presence. Because if you're already walking into a situation where people are anxious, maybe someone just got the notice that they have metastasized cancer. Maybe someone's in prison and they've gotten some bad news. The point is that you have to be the calm one. Your presence. You don't even have to say a word, but just your presence will radiate the calm. And that calmness will spread it around the room. So just think, when we do that in life, that's why people can meditate in urban areas and crime goes down. Power of thought. The power of presence. That's why Jesus says, when two or three gather in my name, there I am in the midst of them. Because there's a calmness there. There's a sense of presence there. And this is not New Age. This is old. This is ancient wisdom. When someone says, pray for me, I got surgery tomorrow, and you get five or six minds all focused on the same thing, boy, that's power. That's power.
Absolutely. We actually do this on the radio, on our radio station on Sunday. We focus the intent and the morphogenic field of the listenership and the meditation group on the other side of the call, and we focus healing. It's very powerful. Works. It really works. You know, people say, wow, how did you do that? It's changed things. And it does. It changes things.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't drift away, JP.
No, because I feel
you levitating. Don't leave me.
It's okay, but you see what you're talking about when you're talking about you know, when you're in that situation, what people are looking for is a connection with the infinite. Of it's like a heat sink that takes away the charge. I've completely mixed my metaphors, but on the back of a car, you have a little strip that drags along the road, so that you don't build up static discharge, it's a static discharge. People build up their charge, their emotional charge, and that's where you come in, you know, that's because that is what's known as a sink of energy. You're allowing that energy to drain off in a safe way rather than explode somewhere else.
The role is to bring the voltage down.
Exactly.
To neutralize the voltage so we can think clearly and we can connect. And sometimes you have to say, we'll get back to this tomorrow. We'll get back to this tomorrow. Right now, you know, it's just too much voltage. And you know, I mean, maybe your listeners, I know we haven't taken any questions yet, but the listeners.
Oh yeah, I forgot, we have.
I want them to hear that you don't have to have an ET tell you this. It's not about that. I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, I'm glad I'm on, but I'm not special. I struggle. I just shared my marital woes with you. You know, I got to pay my bills. But I'm just saying that it gives me a cushion to fall back on, because we're here to grow. We're here to evolve, and you can do it kicking and screaming, but you're going to do it. It may take you three or four lifetimes to do it, but you're going to do it. Some things are inevitable, but some things can accelerate your growth. How? What? Choosing love over fear. JP, you've been talking about this in various ways, talking about the inner life, the cultivation. For those people out there who don't like the word spiritual, the cultivation of an inner life. And this is not, I'm not talking about let's all sing kumbaya. Love takes work. Love takes work. Love takes setting boundaries. Love takes looking at your own shadow side. No, this is not Mickey Mouse. This is not let's all hold hands and sing kumbaya. No, I'm not going to BS you here, but it's all part of the journey. But once you're clear on who you are and where you want to go, the right person comes in, the right book comes your way, the right information comes your way. Because like you said, JP, it's about your intentions.
Okay, so we do have a question.
Yes.
It arrived about 10 minutes ago. From Hippie Chick, Studio
hey.
B.
All right.
Can you ask him who he thinks the good ETs are and which are the bad? Well, let's see. Good and bad? I'm not sure if you're such a dualist, you know?
Yeah. I'm not, Miss Hippie Chick, I'm not a dualist either. I don't know. I know people told me reptilians were bad. I've met reptilians. They're not bad. I know people have said the grays were bad. I've met grays. They're not bad. I know people have said that black males are dangerous. I'm a black male. I'm not dangerous. I don't look at the world in those type of polarities. But hear me, Miss Hippie Chick. I'm not trying to be self-righteous, and I'm not trying to be cute. But I'm saying that it's not about that. Who's good or bad? Life is gray. No pun intended. You, thou shalt not kill. I had friends in Vietnam. If they want to get back home, guess what they had to do? They had to kill. I wish life was that easy. And if I knew what you asked me, we could split the Nobel Prize money. It's not about good and bad. It's about more evolved and less evolved. Hope that helps.
Thanks. So let's talk about how you see evolution in terms of more evolved, less evolved. What are the signs of it?
I'll tell you what the signs I see. We've been having a lot of unarmed black men killed here by police. People have marched and demonstrated in different cities. Now, these young brothers are dead, but in order for their death not to have been in vain, cities mobilized. Interracial. It's not like civil rights movement, where it's predominantly one. Interracial. Gay people, black people, white people took to the streets and said, this is enough. And now we're seeing some instances like the case in Baltimore, which is my hometown, where six police officers are getting ready to go on trial for homicide. I believe that we would have been in war, we as my country, we would have been in war in Syria long ago, but the government couldn't pull the wool over our eyes and give us a reason to go there. We're trying to do it through the back door. But people's consciousness is changing. We see it on a micro level with women and domestic violence here. Consciousness is changing, and that gives me hope. But that's evolution. And as I said before, it can be at a snail's pace sometime. It can be glacial. But people are changing. But it depends. If you get up in the morning and you say, this is another day on the rock, look at Putin, look at Syria, look at this ABCD, or do you get up and go, this is another day of adventure. This is another day of possibility. It all depends on your view of life. I look at it from a religious standpoint. I am a religious progressive. I believe that human beings can evolve, that we have that potential. Doesn't mean we won't kill each other or what have you, but people can evolve, okay? That's my position. The orthodox position is we're born in sin. So when you get up in the morning, if you have one of those two positions, that's the way you're going to look at the world. And it's not right or wrong. What works for you? What brings you peace? When I look at the world as people, all people are depraved, and they're born in sin, and they're not worthy, and they don't deserve what they get, that didn't give me peace. So it's what gives you peace. The other thing is this. If you think that we're going to kill each other and we're going to blow each other up, then why get up in the morning? Why go out of your house? If the future's already set, then what's the point? The Heisenberg principle says that it's all possibility. We don't have to destroy ourselves. We don't have to blow ourselves up. We don't have to. It's a possibility, but doesn't have to happen. I choose love. That gets me up in the morning and puts me to bed at night. It also gives me peace. So you're either part of the problem or you're part of the solution. If thoughts are things, and if you think the world is going to hell in a handbasket, then you're part of the problem. Because those are the thoughts you're putting out there. You're not changing your thoughts. Nothing's happening to you. You're part of it. I'm part of it. You're not a victim. I'm not a victim. I may have been victimized, but I'm not a victim. Where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. I stole that from a first century Jewish rabbi. Sounds good.
Yeah. So, hey, where'd you stand on the Jesus didn't die on the cross controversy? Jesus died in India and stuff.
You know what? It's compelling. It's compelling. Now, it doesn't take away from his message. I like the fact that he had a wife and some kids.
Not at all.
I love it.
It's better.
I love it that he had good sex and he liked that Palestinian wine. But I also like, listen, if you go to the Gospels, he's only on the cross from 9 to 3, I think. Now, I don't mean only like I could stand it. I'd have peed in my pants and been dead while they were beating me up. But we know that dead bodies don't bleed. Pilate is surprised that he's dead so early. The Roman legion stabs him. What comes out? Blood and water. Well, we know that that dead bodies don't bleed. When you're hanging perpendicular, all the blood goes to your feet. So he's taken down. It's a good chance. Josephus, the Jewish historian, traitor, if you will, tells us about people living on the cross for days. Yes, it was Passover, at least that they tell us, so you couldn't just have him hanging up there. I don't know why. I mean, Rome wasn't that. Well, who knows? I don't recall being back there. But people live for days. You're up there 6 hours. I stab you. Blood and water comes out. You're still alive. He goes to India. They have the whole legend of Saint Isa. Palestinian man comes in around 12, 13, 14, preaches, learns things, goes back to Palestine, he's crucified, he comes back. Doesn't that sound like a gospel story to you? Hope that answered the question. Not asking you to believe it, but you asked the question.
True. I mean, I've been following these threads, you know, what's real, what's not, you know, what's empire, what's story, you know, all that stuff.
You're a troublemaker, man.
Oh, well, you know, I try my best. I'm just looking for something that makes sense, man.
I'm with you, man. A good friend of mine, Sean DeMarco, just texted me. He concurs. They'll kill us all in the morning.
Let them kill us. You know,
I'll be right back.
Yeah, you make us stronger. It's like, you can't kill us because we are Legion. Yeah. It doesn't matter that I'm Jeremy Perrin and you're Michael. It doesn't matter because the same message comes out of the different mouths. And yeah, it's
I'll be
beautiful.
Right back. I may come back as a woman next time so they won't be able to find me so easy.
Oh, maybe people will take notice. You might have better hair. I don't know. It's like that. I could do with coming back with better hair. You know, people have a bad hair day. That's nothing. I have bad hair lifetime. Meanwhile, Michael, how do people give us a quick taster? Number one of your book. Of your new book, and number two of the contact thing, how people can get hold of you. You've got about 6 or 7 minutes, so okay. Away you go.
I'll make it even quicker. If you want to contact me, Michael, MICHAEL, initial J as in Jerry, S as in Sam Carter, @gmail.com. If you want to go, I gave the information about the contact in the desert, gravedistractions.com. That's my publisher. The books are on Amazon UK and Barnes & Noble's UK. I answer all my emails. I used to put my phone number up, but people said bad things about me and my mother, so I stopped that. But you can always contact me. The first book, Alien Scriptures, is about angels and aliens. It's about the Bible. It's about, I say that if you see, everywhere you see angel in the Bible, if you put E.T., it makes more sense. The second book is about not using the church, not getting rid of the church, but you don't have to use the church to affirm who and what you believe. I go into the history of Gnosticism. I use the Billy Meyer and the Palladian spirituality as a point of departure. Just food for thought. People seem to love the UFO and the Bible, the book. That sells more, but I would urge you to buy both. They're cheap. That's all I can tell you. I'm cheap, like you said, JP. I'm cheap. I'm cheap. JP's cheap and I'm cheap.
Cheap.
And if you can get out to Joshua Tree, that'd be great. I don't get out west that often. My friend Sean's out there. Another friend of mine's in Santa Monica. Keep them in your prayers. They just had a 3.7 earthquake 2 days ago. But who knows? I'll venture out there more if the universe allows it. And you know, call me. No, don't call me because I'm not giving out my number anymore. Email me, MichaelJSCarter@gmail.com. You can Google me. You'll see my work and my articles and interviews. And I just wish you all peace. And don't believe the hype. And keep looking up.
There you go. I'm just looking at my email. Thank you very much for the review copy. I'll have a cast my eye on that. Thank you so much. Michael, it's been a real departure for the usual show, but it's been lovely to have you. And I will. I hope you enjoy and your audience enjoy your presentation at Contact in the Desert. I hope you didn't mind, but I called this show Contact in the Chapel.
I love it. And you know, if you want to talk again after the conference, we can do that. But I wish you a long and happy life, JP, and many blessings to you and yours.
Oh, lovely. Thank you so much. We are all right. Well, we've still actually got 4 minutes to go.
Let's talk.
Yeah, so let's just hang out and, you know, just.
Yeah, 4 minutes. Yeah. First of all, I want to thank Mark and, who's been with me from the beginning, believed in me. Want to shout out to Brian Kennard and Laura Kennard and, Susan Danz. I stand on the shoulders of so many people. Dr. Barry Downing. The late Morris K. Jessup, the late Virginia Brasington, clergy who wrote about UFOs in the Bible. They are pioneers, and I'm just happy to be here. I want to let people know again that what we're talking about is just human evolution. You can do this without ETs, believe me. And if you get a little push from angels or who or whatever, take it. But this is something that we all have to go through. What else can I tell you? If you're into the teachings of Jesus or Muhammad or Buddha, but we find it more so in Christianity, it's just my opinion, look at the teachings rather than the personality, because, you know, I consider myself a follower of the teachings of Jesus. I've been an atheist, I've been an agnostic, I've been a Buddhist, I've been, I don't know, I don't care, but I always go back to those teachings, probably because I'm a man of the West, and that's what I was taught. But I get to define what they mean to me. Remember, Jesus was a Jew, but he had a lot of enemies in the Jewish tradition because he wasn't Jewish enough. Well, if you subscribe to what Jay is talking about or what I'm talking about, you may not be Christian enough, but you get to decide what that means, not them. And that any religion teaches you boundaries. It's good to have boundaries. This is what I believe, and the other person doesn't believe that. That's great. But remember, you want to get to the point where you transcend boundaries. Jesus was born a Jew, but his life and teachings went beyond Judaism. And that's what we're all called to do. We can have our boundaries, Native American spirituality, pagan spirituality, Judaism, Muslim, whatever. That's fine. But Hinduism, but remember, Gandhi, King, Rabbi Abraham Heschel, they went beyond their traditions because that's where the magic is. The boundaries are there to let us know that there are no boundaries. So I wish everyone peace in their walk. Maybe we'll meet again. If not, live long and prosper. Thanks, JP.
Fascinating.
And listen, don't forget to send me a link to this show.
Sure, I will.
I love it.
This is
a very good show.
We've been going out on Revolution Radio out of Kentucky, and Wolf Spirit Radio out of Nevada, Muncie, Indiana, and Scotland here, and Scottish Sovereigns on the Land, ning.com, and Tiranasau in Ireland. We're spreading across the globe, my friend, and the message is getting out.
And I hope they buy the book. One day I'll get there. We're almost done. Are you Celtic spirituality?
Well, there's all sorts of stuff around here. I live near Finchley.
John O'Donohue.
I have a crystal from his collection sitting on my desk.
Oh my God! So, I have his book, Blessing the Space Between.
Blessings, blessings to everybody who's listening. The thing normally goes off by now, and it's been doing this for weeks now. It's knocking me off. We just have to keep going. And now it says 57. All right, it's supposed to be at 56. Maybe it won't even happen. Maybe I just have to give it up. What's happened to the jingles? I'd like to thank everybody. Please donate to the station. We've got lots of bits of equipment that we need to buy. Hawk is now having to eat scraps. He's having to eat the scraps that his dogs have left, you know, because he's spent so much money. So donate into the cause and keep Revolution Radio going. Thank you very much, everybody. Lukey, Kiran, Olive, Shinona, Mark, whoever's been on here. I don't know which ones have been listening to Revolution B. Karen, Tracy, Nancy, Colleen, Richard, Yeah, thank you very much, everybody.
Yeah, thank you all, everybody. Peace be with you.
Yeah, all right, well, there we go. That's the end. It should be over, though, man. All right, good night, everybody.